The spirit of performance defines Acura. And now, it's electric. Introducing the all-electric ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. While what powers their cars may change, the energy that makes Acura never will. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system and up to 313-mile range on a single charge, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is everything they said electric could never be. It was built with the driver in mind, just like Acura has been doing since the beginning. We could talk all day, but the only way to experience this electric performance is to drive it yourself. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.
It's Jim Cramer here. You're listening to the opening bell of CNBC's Squawk on the Street. Don't miss a minute of the action.
Good Monday morning. Welcome to Squawk on the Street. I'm Carl Quintanilla with Jim Cramer and David Faber. Tech under pressure once again as the 10-year flirts with 181, got the VIX near 21. Very busy week ahead. CPI Wednesday, Powell's confirmation hearing, Q4 earnings kicking off with the banks on Friday. Our roadmap begins with the S&P going for five straight declines. NASDAQ futures down 1% despite some early hopes that Omicron may be peaking on the East Coast.
Plus, Take Two is buying Zynga. Yep, it's not too early to buy Zynga. For $12.7 billion, CEO Strauss Zelnick will join us this hour.
And the CEO of Gilead is going to join us from the J.P. Morgan Healthcare Conference in just a few moments. We are dealing, Jim, with some critical support levels on the NASDAQ 100 today.
Yeah, I think it could break down. I mean, when you start the morning, say, very early, and obviously interest rates not really doing anything, it looks like that's the day that it's going to bounce. We keep seeing this. And then rates start ticking up. Bitcoin goes down, by the way. Crypto does. You know, crypto seems to play a role in this thing now. And then, David, next thing you know, there's most of the stocks that we follow are down 2, 3, 4 points without anything other than no research. They're just down.
It was a rough week last week, to put it mildly. You know, the indexes, as we often say, don't tell the story.
No.
That sort of tells the story of Apple and Microsoft, but not really the story of so many of these technology names that you, Jim, have pointed out many times, particularly the higher multiple names with perhaps not as much earnings as you'd like. But even those with fairly strong earnings and growth, significant growth, but nonetheless high multiples, getting hit and getting hit hard.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things, I mean, I saw a downgrade today of Airbnb. Now, Airbnb is doing pretty well, but doing pretty well is not inspiring any buyers anymore. And I think one of the things that happened is that we have so many companies that look like other companies, David. I can't keep track of them. And I follow a lot of companies. But they're all, you know, software as a service for the X industry. You know, and the no one wants these stocks, David. There's no backing. No one wants them. They came public. And now to hell with them.
To hell with them.
To hell with them.
How long does that go on for?
I'm thinking they have no sponsor. These people who did these SPACs, Carl, did they understand the way Wall Street works, which is that you need analysts to get behind them and then stay behind them and be able to give us numbers? Most of these companies, we have no numbers. So if you're any sort of fiduciary, you can't buy a SPAC. Yeah. There's no there there.
Your point about the Airbnb downgrade is interesting. It is Piper. They go to neutral largely on the idea that travel trends are normalizing. They argue that at least Americans are getting desensitized to virus headlines. They're going to go back to traditional hotels. And as Dr. Gottlieb on Face the Nation over the weekend suggested, that we might be seeing some peaking cases in parts of the East Coast. Here's what he said.
If you look what's happening across the East Coast right now, New York City, Washington, D.C., Maryland, probably Florida as well have already peaked, maybe Delaware and Rhode Island. You're going to start to see that in the statistics this week. You're going to start to see those curves, those epidemic curves bend down. You're already seeing that in New York City and Washington, D.C. Hospitalizations are down relative to cases, but cases are up substantially. So it's pressing hospitals. Many of the hospitals on the East Coast are going to reach or surpass their previous hospitalization totals.
Fundstrat data last night, Maryland, Maine, D.C., all 10% below the peak.
Yeah. Candidly, I don't want to minimize this, but it's become something people are like, okay, It's not, no one's what I would call in high school, sweating the program. Nope. I mean, David, don't you find, I mean, you probably saw people, you know, at various parts of your workplace that they have a runny nose, you just figure they have COVID.
And they did.
They say that they tested. I mean, like me, when I gave it to Carl, I tested like seven times, sat down next to Carl, doesn't matter. We don't know. We don't know when it clicks in. We do know that testing yesterday, it's like, you know, a hamburger today.
Doesn't really help you. Listen, no. I, if you have three shots in you, you really don't appear to have that much to be concerned about. You may get sick, but you're highly, highly likely not to end up in the hospital. By the way, we should point out a number of these hospitalizations, and it's hard to measure exactly, but a significant percentage, let's call it, are people who went to the hospital for something else and then were tested for COVID and had it. But that was not why they were in the hospital.
Right. And a lot of carriers. But let me go back to the Airbnb just as a metaphor for what's going on. I mean, last week we were told to buy Airbnb because of Omicron. Now we're told to sell Airbnb because Omicron peaking. Well, what does that do to people? People just say, you know, I'm not playing this silly game. I'm just not going to be involved. So you have retail just stepping aside. You have the institutions just looking at the 10-year and saying, I want nothing to do with it. And then you have ARK with a big insider selling.
That's where I was going, ARK. Just literally punching it up as you...
ARK?
Yeah.
As you were mentioning. ARK's not that good.
No.
And, you know, ARK was... the era ended. And yet, Carl, no one thought that the era... I mean, these stocks have been going down, the ARK stocks, for months, and nobody cared.
Yep.
And then suddenly people, woke up and said, wow, these are bad
that's
stocks.
That's a great point, and... B of A had a note over the weekend. Fundamentals in growth tech have been sloppy since July, which has nothing to do with rates. And they do Adobe, CRM, PayPal, Amazon, Snap, Twitter, Twilio, DocuSign, Zoom. We've been through this for months.
Yeah, we have.
A lot of those are actually doing well, but it just didn't seem to matter.
Well, that research piece from last week that you and I went back and forth on from UBS about CRM and Adobe definitely got some people's attention.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe you're looking for more reasons to sell, and that's just yet another one.
I think so. I mean, CRM has been tight as a drum in terms of trying to figure out what's going on. I mean, there's not anyone who is indicating that things are weak. Now I had Shantanu Narayen on for Adobe in an upcoming meeting, and Adobe was very forthcoming about what was right and what was wrong. And yet suddenly, people were taking down price targets everywhere. Now, everyone was taking, the same people were taking down price targets, were taking them up on the same set of numbers. So, I mean, I find, Carl, the difficulty I have is that if I'm just going to look at the 10-year and everyone's looking at the 10-year, well, then what edge do I have? I have no edge. Oh, the 10-year. I mean, I remember there have been times when I was a hedge fund manager. I'd be like, well, no, Jim, it's the 30-year.
Yeah. Well, and to David's point about absenteeism, look at Lulu today and the guidance out of Lulu, largely driven by Omicron-driven capacity supply constraints.
And I hope it's not Mirror. I mean, I bought Mirror for my daughter. Mirror comes in, I don't know, you know Mirror, Dave?
I know what it is,
okay,
yes.
It comes in a couple of pieces, which means you have to assemble. I mean, I'm done with that with IKEA. And the mirror comes, I can't lift the darn mirror. So it's been sitting in the hallway for the last 3 weeks.
Right.
I mean, what do I need, a hand truck?
Yes.
A magliner?
Potentially.
Well, I don't want to have to have a magliner to be able to put together some mirror.
Which,
by the way, mirror, not on the wall. If it breaks, it's like, I'm done.
You got to hire somebody to come in.
Right, you have to hire someone. Well, yeah. David, that's suboptimal to have to hire someone to bring in a mirror. Why don't I could, it's easier for me to hire a yoga instructor to come in.
There's Lulu, which again is looking down on that.
That's
on
the same chart as about 400 other stocks.
And there's some comments from the CEO. We started the holiday season in a strong position since experienced several consequences of the Omicron variant.
And not being helped by this downgrade in Nike.
Oh, my. The downgrade. Nike. Now, Nike's been taking it's just been a pinata. And remember, Nike's last quarter surprised to the upside. Well, that's just oh, my God. That's a really bad chart.
There's a lot of really bad charts.
Yeah, well, I know.
Which then begs the question, when is it time to consider for certain companies?
Right. Well, I think
you love this joke.
It goes back
months, right?
Yeah.
Our Zynga joke.
The copper stocks are up.
Is it too early?
David?
Months. It goes back years, Carl.
I think that Strauss-Zelnick changed the whole narrative in terms of whether it was too early to buy Zynga.
We used to kid, of course, during Zynga's toughest years.
They
and you were right, by the way, because the stock kept going down, and we would always have a joke here. Is it too early to buy
Zynga?
Was it too early for Strauss Zelnick,
no.
The CEO?
But you like that Farmville, or do you like the Harry Potter? Which game do you like?
I don't play the Farmville. I see on the a lot of people play some of the things on the Subway.
No, they just play Candy Crush.
Yeah.
I mean, it's incredible.
Candy Crush is owned by Microsoft?
No, by Activision Blizzard.
Oh, Activision Blizzard.
I mean, I sit there and I, you know, my wife is watching the mayor of Easttown and then the king of Easton, Knightstown, whatever. And like a lot of people, it's just, they multitask. You're watching the mayor of...
I've watched mayor of Easttown.
Of Kingstown?
Let me
or the mayor of
Westchester.
I'm
not watching the Kingstown. That's on, is that on Paramount Plus?
It's Paramount Plus, which, by the way, there's
a positive
note.
We're going to get to the Viacom
note.
By the way, the name you wanted to own this year was Discovery.
Can you believe
come
it?
In Jan 1, I want as much Discovery as possible. And it's not because of Bill Wong over at, buying it.
But how about Viacom today on a play of, it could be the next
Discovery. Discovery's up 27%. Of course, Jessica Reif got involved last week, sending it up higher. All right, can we get
she's
to the
Reef?
Can we get to the, no, she isn't.
I know. You got to stay up to date.
She's not even Reef Cohen. She's something else. And forget.
Whatever.
All right, I call her that because that's how I remember.
She's a very good analyst, whatever yes. She goes by.
Let's get to the Take-Two deal, guys, and just talk a bit about it. $9.86 a share. By the way, that will, there's a collar. We don't, you know, we see collars, but typically a larger company of this size buying a smaller one, you're going to happy you had that collar, aren't you? Because Take-Two looks like it's going to be down as much as 10%, but that will not impact the overall value of the deal, at least until or unless Take-Two goes below, oh, there it is, it is below, the 156 of the bottom of the collar. So you will start to see a bit of value erode there.
Meaning, but, in other words, Take-Two can go
right.
down.
The ratio, though, the collar is 156 to 181 or 182, and therefore the ratio changes within that to maintain the 636 in stock. Now, you're also getting $3.50 a share in cash. That adds up to your 986. By the way, Jim, interesting. All-time high here is higher. I mean, this stock was $12 bucks in
that's
21.
That's why I looked at Strauss.
I'm sorry. Yeah, in last
so
summer.
So we could have Strauss on. I mean, the fact is that it's a big discount to where it was,
it
but he's paying the same price as what it was last year.
But it also,
no takeover
could,
premium.
No, well, 64% premium.
No, but I'm saying
price.
Versus a year versus 6 months ago.
Yeah. At the same time, there are a couple of things that are quite shareholder-friendly for Zynga shareholders. There was a 45-day go shop, I'm told, by people who are familiar with the situation. The reason for that, we'll ask Strauss about it, is because there was no, they didn't shop it. There was no
right.
competitive process here. So you do have a 45-day go shop. Typically, we see those involved with go privates, not as often in deals like this one. And it requires a vote on both sides, and you have the collar. So you could argue quite friendly to a certain extent for Zynga shareholders as well. But the real question is, does this bring another wave or a wave of consolidation within this industry? Not necessarily amongst the biggest.
Right.
Activision, which has had its own set of problems. EA and now Take-Two.
But
at that next level where there are a number of assets that they're going to want to people might want to snap up.
Do you think it's because Take-Two needed more of a mobile presence? It's a good mobile presence for them.
Yes.
Kind of
but has Activision succeeded with that King deal? Remember they did that deal?
I think
deal?
It's been terrific for
you
them.
Do.
I think it's been cultural problems and the missing of certain titles. By the way, I think Strauss may argue with this, but I do believe, Carl, that when you have a Take-Two and they don't do a new, they miss their deadlines. A lot of guys miss their deadlines this year on new games. And that is the kiss of death on Wall Street.
All right, you got to feed the beast. There's no doubt about
yes.
that.
Yes.
When we come back, very busy week at the J.P. Morgan Healthcare Conference. We'll talk about COVID and the company behind Remdesivir, Gilead's Daniel O'Day, as that conference kicks off today, along with a bunch of calls, Dell, Amex, Medtronic, Viacom, our parent Comcast, Tesla, Exxon. There's futures. More Squawk on the Street in a moment.
Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones, from powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY, a big idea that inspired the world to invest differently, and still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
What's on the horizon for financial markets? At PGIM, it's a question that over 1,400 investment professionals relentlessly research in pursuit of your long-term goals. Specialized across asset classes, but united in collaboration, our teams provide global and local expertise. Our investments shape tomorrow, today. Pursue your tomorrow with PGIM, a leading global asset manager.
Our Meg Terrell is covering the J.P. Morgan Healthcare Conference this week and joins us this morning with a special guest. Hi, Meg.
Hey, Carl. That special guest is Gilead CEO Daniel O'Day. Dan, thanks for being with us this morning as we kick off our coverage of the conference. You know, I want to start by asking you about remdesivir, your COVID antiviral drug, as we're in the thick of Omicron right now. And we've been hearing a lot about the potential for this to be used similarly to the antibody drugs, where if you can give it early before people are hospitalized, it can really be helpful. How much use are you seeing in that setting right now?
Yeah, thanks, Meg. Thanks for having me. And remdesivir has really been had a major impact upon this pandemic over the course of the past now close to 2 years. It is the standard of care in the hospital setting. And in fact, 3 out of 5 patients that are administered to the hospital are receiving remdesivir. And that's making a big difference for patients. It's getting patients out of the hospital sooner, 5 to 7 days sooner, and stopping them from going on to more severe consequences of the disease. So, you know, this is really a major impact, particularly at this time when hospitals are under such stress. And importantly, it's working across all known variants today, including Omicron. And thanks to the investment we made, we have, you know, adequate supply. And, you know, you also mentioned now the new data that came out and was just published in the New England Journal of Medicine in December, actually, just before Christmas, where a short course of remdesivir therapy given in the outpatient setting is close to 90% effective at stopping patients from going into the hospital setting. So this is making a big impact on the pandemic, and we certainly look forward to making sure that the NIH guidelines that now have remdesivir in the outpatient setting are communicated to clinicians and to hospital centers to provide yet another options for patients with COVID.
Right. And it's even more important now as we've lost so many of our treatment options and two of the antibody drugs because they've lost effectiveness against Omicron. Dr. Fauci has talked about 3-day remdesivir as really being a solution that should be looked to. But it's 3 days of intravenous administration of this therapy. And we saw how difficult it was for even a one-time treatment with antibody drugs. Is our infrastructure set up to do this well?
Well, I think the antibody drugs have helped to make sure that the outpatient settings are more capable today than they were, let's say, 18 months ago at being able to deliver these outpatient infusions. I would say that, you know, with 30 years of experience, Gilead has a lot of experience in knowing that we're going to need multiple different options in the outpatient setting and in the hospital to really attack COVID and bring it to its knees. And, you know, I think it won't be appropriate for all patients necessarily, but for those centers that are that have outpatient capability, this will be a very, very important tool, given the level of efficacy and benefit this has for patients. And in addition, Meg, we're also working on an oral form of remdesivir. It's going into early stage trials now. And what we know for sure after 30 years of experience in HIV is that we're going to need a lot of different mechanisms to be able to attack this virus, both in the hospital and outpatient. And Gilead stands firm and committed to making sure those therapies become available.
Mm, and when you say oral, is that the inhaled version of remdesivir, or are we talking a tablet that you swallow?
We're talking a tablet that you swallow. So what we decided is that given the fact that our tablet that you swallow was in about the same stage as the inhaled version, we're putting all of our resources into the oral version. And again, when one thinks about our you know, legacy in HIV, with a disease like this that mutates frequently and is involved in large populations, we're also thinking that this will need multiple different medicines, perhaps, for a patient to really be effective against all the potential future variants. So many of our HIV medicines, for instance, have 2 or 3 drug combinations in a single pill. So that's our strategy longer term, is to think about not only oral remdesivir, which is one way of fighting the virus outside the hospital, but combining that but with potentially other types of ways of fighting the virus to really suppress this and get us into a stage where we can manage this disease on a daily basis and a yearly basis.
Well, of course, you're working in other areas as well. And one area that investors are very focused on is your cancer drug Trodelvy and an expected readout of a clinical trial in breast cancer, perhaps at the end of this month, early next month. What can you tell us about the timeline for that? Is that when you're still expecting it and your confidence in what that's going to look like?
This is a really important point in time for Gilead, because not only are we the leading company in antivirals, but we're evolving to a company that now has a leading portfolio in anti-cancer medicines, of which last year alone we had five new FDA approvals, four of which were in cancer. One is what you mentioned, Trodelvy, which is a medicine that brings an anti-cancer killing agent directly to the cancer cells. And we've seen actually in late-stage breast cancer, hard-to-treat late-stage breast cancer, already it's approved and being used in women with this disease, and more than doubling their survival. So this is a medicine, Trodelvy, that has the potential to be used across many different cancer types. And so we've got now the readout coming up that you mentioned in another type of breast cancer called hormone receptor positive breast cancer that we're expecting shortly, but many other cancer types as well, including lung cancer, where we've announced a variety of collaborations using Trodelvy that could eventually replace chemotherapy in combination with immunotherapies, like the immunotherapies that are on the market today. We've announced a collaboration this morning with Merck, where we're looking at bringing Trodelvy in combination with Keytruda, or their PD-1 agent, into frontline non-small cell lung cancer after already announcing a collaboration with them in frontline triple-negative breast cancer. So there's a lot of promise here, Meg. We have more than, we expect more than 20 new indications for cancer medicines coming out of Gilead between now and the next decade.
All right. Well, Dan O'Day, there's a lot of excitement there, especially for that readout. Thanks so much for being with us, and we look forward to talking with you again soon. And guys, coming up, our coverage of the conference continues with Novavax CEO Stan Erck in the next hour. Carl, we'll toss it back to you.
All right. Busy day for you, Meg. Thanks, Meg Terrell. Still to come this morning, Take-Two Interactive CEO Strauss Zelnick on his company buying Zynga in that cash and stock deal. Of course, Zynga shares soaring on the news. But take a look at futures. NASDAQ's down four straight, close to a three-month low, and looks to start in the red again today on a busy week. Don't go away.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. FedEx Ground service is also faster to more locations than UPS Ground. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively, FedEx.
At Capella University, you'll get support from people who care about your success. From before you enroll to after you graduate, pursue your goals knowing help is available when you need it. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.
Going to see some selling pressure here at the open. Dow futures indicated down 100 plus, NASDAQ 200 plus. The opening bell is in less than 5 minutes. Don't go anywhere.
Before we get started with trading here at the New York Stock Exchange, we'll see if it's another difficult week for stocks, at least if you happen to own them.
Right.
Lucid hanging in there, actually, a bit more than certainly Rivian.
So glad you mentioned just like that, because a lot of people are short Lucid, and they were thinking that this January 20th expiration, which includes expiration lockup, by the way, the Saudi private investment fund, that they would dump. Now, Adam Jonas says, look, that's actually a strategic investment. And the strategic meaning, it pays for them to stay, as opposed to Ford, Rivian, not a strategic investment. David, they're not going to, Lucid, Jonas thinks they're not going to sell.
The Saudis, right, who
yeah.
own a big stake. They were an important part of putting that deal together, if you remember, back right. when it was CCIV and it was a SPAC, Michael Klein and his relationship with the Saudis, but yeah.
Another thing, a lot of the hedge funds are shorted, betting that it's going to be a downside surprise in deliveries. It's basically saying that they've kept expectations really low. And yet, David, because the NASDAQ's so bad, Lucid's down anyway.
Lucid's down. You know, Rivian, of course, last week, Carl, hit its IPO price, or maybe even fell a bit below it.
Wow.
On concerns.
The one.
It's the one.
Yep. as Jonas likes to call it. Actually, Tesla today gets named a top pick.
I know.
And Goldman.
Not a lot of bones to that. Boy, I've got to tell you, the damage that's happening to the market is totally masked by the banks, which make the Dow Jones average look so good. But now we're really starting to get, I mean, Nike was an institutional favorite. Lulu was an institutional favorite.
Yep.
I mean, they're not going to be made up by Boot Barn. And yep. It isn't like that. I mean, I just find that this market is treacherous. We need to see some stabilization in megatech, and we've not.
By the way, at the big board this morning, fintech company Envestnet at the NASDAQ, it is the J.P. Morgan Healthcare Conference. We are going to get JPM and Citi and Wells and BlackRock on Friday. How much is riding on it?
Well, I think a great deal. But I also think that this is one where every single day that the tenure goes down in price, up in yield, people get excited about this group. Now, they have to deliver incredible numbers. David, the expectations being created by the tenure is going to make it so a Bank of America has to say on the conference call, we are going to make a ton of money this year. And I don't know. They're a responsible company. I don't know if they're going to do that.
You don't know that they're going to actually articulate it,
right.
Or you don't know that they're actually going to hit.
No, why would they? Brian Moynihan is so not a hype artist. I think we've all come to know that Brian Moynihan, straight shooting guy.
Yeah.
And the one thing he doesn't do is say, you know what, 10 years doing perfect for us. That's just not his style.
The name that has benefited the most so far this year, and we say year, it's been 5 days, is Wells Fargo.
Oh, my God.
It's up almost 16%.
Wells is different because Charlie Scharf can say, listen, I've now completed, I've fired everyone. There's no one left. I mean, it would shock me if there was anyone in the senior team that is now left. So that's Charlie Scharf, CEO, has a very compelling story to say. At the same time, the expectations, you have to remember that in 2018, this stock was at 60 before Janet Yellen took the wood to it, said that it had regulatory problems. So all it's doing is getting back to where it was in 2018. All the rest of the banks have soared. So it's a possibility he's playing catch up.
By the way, speaking of all this, it is the same old story this morning. Financials and energy, the only two sectors that are green. Oppie does name Amex a top pick today. They say it's going to be a good year for card issuers relative to the S&P.
I think it is. I think that that was a spend call, that spending will be up this year. I think that that's a good call. Stocks had a decent run, but it's kind of like fintech light, but bank heavy. The fintechs themselves, when I saw PayPal, we ran a headline, I don't know, like at 4:30, which just said PayPal discussing whether it might even do crypto. I mean, you know, a stable coin. And, you know, you can't put out that. Carl, I mean, you're either going to do it or you're not. And I knew PayPal was going to be down. PayPal was strong on Thursday, weak on Friday. These stocks, the fintech stocks, they are a nightmare, Carl. And Gensler's comments this morning about everything being regulated, if it's being sold to individuals, that just made everything even more fraught.
Yeah.
Wow, look at that.
NVIDIA's given up another 4% today, Jim. You know, we've been talking a lot about cloud and software. Yeah. Semis, relative to that, have held up as far as fundamentals go.
But more of the commodity semis. I mean, Micron's been really good. NVIDIA... David, you know NVIDIA still has not declared that the ARM deal is over, but they had a great presentation Monday last week, a great presentation Tuesday, completely ignored by both the investors and the analysts. And they were terrific. I mean, I watched them, and they were quite, Colette Kress at a conference last week, the CFO, said, listen, things are going much better than expected. It doesn't matter. People want out. High multiple.
Again, is this going to be something we're talking about 3 months, 6 months from now? Is it going to be something we're talking about at the end of the year? Is this has been a very difficult year? Is it all dependent on rates, or do we hit some sort of point at which earnings come through?
I think that
and
earnings,
once again, this rotation from value from growth to value reverses.
So in that sense, we should be looking at Alphabet and Meta platform, because those are the two that actually are cheap. You know, they have David, their multiples are well under a lot of consumer product companies.
Yeah, and with incredible top-line growth,
right,
at least as of the last couple of quarters. I mean, Alphabet, which had a very good year last year, very strong in terms of the stock, is down over 7% so far this year.
But, you know, Carl, let's say rates were back to 175, where Jay Powell said something on tenure. Jay Powell said something saying, look, Omicron, we really don't know the damage it's doing, so we're going to keep looking. Then you're going to get a big reversal. So I don't want to tell people, look, it's time to sell NVIDIA. I mean, NVIDIA is a great secular growth name. But I think a lot of people just say, I'm not waiting for the call. I just get me out.
Yeah. We're going to hear from Powell tomorrow. And then Brainard, maybe some argue, just as important Thursday, what a dove would say about the rate environment. Costin, great note last night out of Goldman. Stocks struggle when the pace of rates change.
That was a great note.
And the last two, either a five-day or a one-month, does qualify as a two-plus standard deviation move.
Well, I mean, I think that when he talked about rate boosts, David, you know, this game is kind of like playing the over-under in football. It's like, well, I'm at four. Costa's four. The guy who goes to five is staking out the territory of multiple rate hikes. And you know, it's almost as if there's a leapfrog game going on. And every time you hear that, all you want to do is sell high multiple.
Right.
Until they become so cheap that you're saying, why am I selling a value tech name? But we're not near that, particularly when company software as a service, but also in cybersecurity, where people are fleeing as if the bad guys have lost, and you know the bad guys haven't lost.
No, but again, those are names that are extremely high multiples.
Yes.
They do have significant growth rates, but this is not a market for that
they don't
right
make
now,
money.
Particularly with rates moving higher.
Yeah, I get a lot of calls, Carl, in the lightning round. And I hate to say it, but I say, look, that company is losing money. No one's going to buy it. It seems like they'd rather buy Tilray, which is on tonight.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
I think the number two Wall Street bet search this morning.
Well, it reported, David always loves it. It's got David, looks pretty good there, Tilray.
Really, Tilray?
Yeah, that's Irwin Simon.
I know.
Plus, they're changing the name. You know, this is really, David, this is a name you got to look at, Tilray.
Okay.
Because people haven't cared about cannabis in a very long time.
No, they don't care about cannabis.
But let's see what Irwin Simon.
Wait until they start advertising for cannabis on the NFL the same way they advertise now for online bet.
If Matt Damon does a cannabis ad, then we know.
Then we know.
Yeah, the future.
Well, no, that's crypto.
I know it's crypto.
But who's a future favor?
Future favor? Oh, the Bolt, not the Brave.
Right, the Bolt. A lot of people, I checked it.
Yes.
It's possible you can do both Bold or
By the
Brave.
Way,
I looked at it.
But that literally is the worst written ad I've ever seen. It's a bunch of words, means absolutely nothing. Who's that first guy he's pointing to when he's walking through?
Fernando Magellan.
Who is that guy?
Magellan made it.
Who is the guy climbing up something?
I think that was Mallory.
That is the... Meanwhile, Take-Two Interactive is down 12%.
Well, the future...
Strauss Zelnick says the future is in mobile gaming.
He's bold.
Yeah.
Is he going to favor him?
I don't know.
I don't think it favors him. I think it's a brave they favor.
But he's coming up. And
how about the young? How about the youthful?
We're not going to talk about
this. Does the future favor the youthful?
We're not going to talk about abs. We're going to talk about the deal of the day as he is buying Zynga, of course.
You didn't bite into that Tilray call that I made. 10% increase. I think that Sarah and Wilf have. They have. Irwin Simon. Yeah, late, by the way, you know, he used to work at another company.
Got it.
Paint.
Yes.
I do. I remember this. Irwin is irrepressible.
Yeah. By the way, quick look at the bond report. We've been watching yields all morning long. A 10-year did get to close to 181. As we're watching the VIX as well, above 21. Busy week, of course, with Powell and Brainard on the Hill later in the week. We're back in a moment.
Shares of Take-Two Interactive are down sharply this morning. You've seen it down over 12%. This after announcing its plans to buy Zynga. Joining us now in a CNBC exclusive is Take-Two's chairman and CEO, Strauss Zelnick. And Strauss, it's great to have you this morning. You know, your shareholders are seeing a bit of losses pile up there. So what do you tell them as to why this is the right thing for Take-Two to do?
Look, this is a transformative opportunity for us. This will position Take-Two as one of the largest publicly traded interactive entertainment companies in the world, with over 50% of our net bookings coming from the fastest growing segment in the business, mobile and free-to-play. It also positions us to grow our collection of owned intellectual property. One of the things that we love about Zynga is, like Take-Two, they have a multiplicity of great titles that they control, many great titles, what they call forever franchises. We think that's a great opportunity going forward. You know, it's early days, right? We've just announced this. But one of the things that we announced is, without regard to any revenue synergies, we expect the combined company to grow its top line about 14% annually for the next 3 years. through our fiscal 24. And yet we've also identified a minimum of $500 million in annual revenue run rate synergies by working together, by improving the quality of our collective operations, and by bringing new products to market. So we think it's extraordinarily exciting.
Yeah. All right. Listen, we do see, given there is a stock component here, there is sometimes a natural arbitrage in terms of some people shorting the stock. But, you know, still down over almost 13%, Strauss. Not necessarily how you draw it up in the boardroom. What do you tell those shareholders right now? And what do you think in terms of the loss of, you know, almost 13% of your market value after you announce a transformative deal?
Look, the math is the math. And I think if you solely focus on the stock component and the premium paid, you can understand the trading pattern. However, we're building this company for the long term, and that's always been our approach. And while one would never want to be cavalier about one stock performance because they're real investors who are trading, we are trying to build a business over a very long period of time. We've never paid that much attention to intraday trading marks. We've paid attention to creating value for our players, for our colleagues, and most importantly, for our shareholders. And that's worked out over a very long period of time. I believe it will work out here as well.
Now, Strauss, it's Jim. It's always good to see you. Thank you for coming on our show.
Thanks, Jim. Great to see you.
One thing I was confused by, you, this is normally a level where if you weren't doing a deal, I think you'd be buying a lot of stock. That the stock has gotten quite cheap versus where it has been. What do you do with the existential crisis of basically saying, listen, my stock is down so low, boy, I'd love to buy it, but you're issuing stock?
We are, and we have collar around the transaction, which protects that, of course, within a range. And we did do a buyback recently. We bought back a great deal of stock at a price of about 158. But as you know, we can't project around intraday movements. We have to make long-term strategic bets. And in the fullness of time, I believe this will prove to be a very successful one.
Because there's been some disagreement about how much it matters, say, that one of the two Housers left at Grand Theft, Dan, that there have been some defects in the new Grand Theft Auto. There's been a you have always held this, and we're not going to put out any game before it's time. Can this smooth out what many of these analysts, although you have not, but smooth out a kind of a longer-term view that also adds mobile to make it so your earnings are less episodic?
Unquestionably, we expect our earnings to be less episodic. This will give us a larger, more diversified financial and creative footprint, and we think that'll benefit shareholders. And with regard to the GTA trilogy, that was actually not a new title. That was a remaster of pre-existing titles. We did have a glitch in the beginning. That glitch was resolved, and the title has done just great for the company. So we're very excited. We have an amazing pipeline going forward. Zynga has an incredible pipeline going forward. And together, we think we can do a whole lot more than what's already been announced.
Strauss, you mentioned the collar. The stock is trading below that collar, so that will have the effect of at least bringing the value overall down a bit. There also was a 45-day go shop, which is not necessarily typical of a deal like this. Why was that included? Why is that something you agreed to?
Look, Zynga's board requested that. The details will be filed in the next couple of days. We are protected in the event that the deal does not come our way in terms of a breakup consideration. We wanted to be as friendly as possible to the party with whom we're combining. And we believe that this deal will come to fruition because we think this deal makes the most sense for shareholders.
Yeah, I mean, my understanding is there wasn't a competitive process, so this protects them. Do you expect that there might be another bidder here that wants to own Zynga as much as you do?
Very hard for me to say.
And what about the competitive landscape overall? When you think about EA or you think about Activision right now, in terms of what you have now done with this deal, how are you positioned versus those competitors?
Look, we've been saying for years, including on this show, that the one burden that we couldn't resolve organically in the time frame we'd like to was scale. And to be competitive, to address the most interesting opportunities in the future and to deliver competitive operating margins, we needed scale. But it had to be a certain kind of scale. It had to be scale that was consistent with what we need to provide to our players, which is the best collection of owned intellectual property in the business. It had to be consistent culturally as well to make sure that it worked. We're now on a pro forma basis at $6 billion in net bookings, growing 14% annually for the next 3 years. That puts us in a position where we are highly competitive with the two bigger players in the business. I think scale will matter. Given the opportunity set that we see ahead, I think it matters more than ever.
You know, you mentioned culture. There's always a concern on the part of shareholders. Perhaps it's even being reflected to a certain extent in your stock price right now, that it's difficult to integrate. What assurances do you give your shareholder base that you know how to actually undertake this to make sure that the cultures do mesh and that you do get those synergies that are so important to this deal you're talking about?
They're fair questions. You know, we've gotten to know this management team over a very long period of time. It's obviously a very friendly combination. And one of the key issues was, do we fit together culturally? We're so excited that Frank Gibeau and Bernard Kim are going to run the Zynga division, which encompasses T2 Mobile Games and Zynga's operations inside the Take-Two family. And we're all on the same page about the way that we need to integrate. And of course, the real win is creating new revenue. We will also be able to reduce costs as we ought to. But the exciting opportunities are all about taking our existing titles and marketing them more effectively. We're now going to have a combined customer database of 1 billion records. I mean, it's absolutely extraordinary. And Zynga has great data analytics and the ChartBoost platform that will speak to everything that Take-Two is doing, mobile and free-to-play. Zynga has ambitions in cross-platform titles. We have that expertise here. And we have great intellectual property that so far has been expressed on console and PC and has not been brought to mobile. We think we can bring that to mobile, and that is not reflected in the revenue synergies that we discussed. That's incremental.
Now, Strauss, I was out at NVIDIA recently, and it's very clear that Jensen Huang's got unbelievable ideas about the actual, I'm talking about lifelike, maybe more than lifelike characters, where you can insert them into current video games. Where are you with using these new chips that NVIDIA has that make it so that it's not just lifelike, but it's just pure reality?
So it's a great question. You know, we haven't talked about specific chip manufacturers, and you know, NVIDIA is a spectacular company, and I know a favorite of yours, Jim, and it's been a great call. I've said many times within the next 5+ years, and it's always hard to call the exact timing, we're going to be able to make interactive entertainment that looks like live action, even though it's entirely created inside a computer. Now, not all titles will want to look that way. In the same way that not all motion pictures today are live action, there's animation as well. There are numerous different creative expressions in interactive entertainment. However, in certain instances, for example, sports games, basketball, I think you can expect that they will look more and more lifelike, and that's a result of what technological advances are enabling our creative teams to do. And, you know, combined, we're going to have 8,000 people who develop video games between the Zynga operation and the Take-Two operation.
Wow. Finally, you know, kind of on that note to a certain extent, even deals that don't appear anti-competitive on the face, and I would include yours amongst them, get a very tough review these days from either the DOJ or the FTC. What assurances can you give shareholders, in your belief at least, that you're going to be able to pass the regulatory review that's coming your way on an antitrust level?
We feel good about it. You know, we're still smaller than our biggest competitors, of course. We have a very diverse business. This is a huge market. We're still, in terms of a percentage of the overall market, a relatively small enterprise. So we feel cautiously optimistic.
All right. Strauss, appreciate your joining us on this important day for your company. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Take a break here this morning. S&P's working to hold 4,600, which we've not breached since December 21. Banks, S&P banks at an all-time high, and Bitcoin below 40K. A lot going on. We're back in a moment. Let's get to Jim and stop trading.
One of the most important stocks to watch is Dell, which Dell is meeting this weekend. By the way, there are some terrific comments that we've been getting about Dell and how cheap it is. Today it's Bernstein. I happen to think that that watching Dell is the exact opposite of watching what's happening in the high multiple tech. So the proof of the pudding about both the relationship with bonds, but also the notion of tangible, Dell makes things that are tangible, they have customers, they have cash flow, they have money in the bank. That's what people want. So just watch Dell. Dell is going to be the determinant about whether there's going to be a reversion to the Octas of the world. Dell, a remarkably good company.
Yeah, Bernstein ups to outperform this morning. How about tonight?
Okay, I have Dexcom. Everyone has to pay attention to the J.P. Morgan Healthcare Conference. Dexcom's been a remarkable stock. It's glucose monitoring, and it's really invented the category. But by the way, Abbott Labs has something called Libre that's very good too. Medtronic, which we didn't get to, used to be a powerhouse in this. Medtronic's been the subject of multiple downgrades in the last few weeks. People are going to start questioning the execution at Medtronic.
Yeah, got another one this morning. BTIG goes to neutral. We've been talking about the pipeline there for a while.
Yeah, now that's a stock that's down very, very big. And I remember when a couple years ago it was under 100. It seems like it's headed there again.
Jim, a lot to watch this week.
Thank you.
Yeah, buckle up. We'll get to see you tonight. Mad Money, 6 p.m. Eastern time.
You've been listening to the opening bell on CNBC's Squawk on the Street.
Sometimes it takes a different approach to help you unlock your true potential. With Capella University's game-changing FlexPath learning format, you gain relevant skills you can apply to your career right away. Earn your degree from an accredited university and be confident in the quality of your education. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu. Capella University is accredited by the Higher Learning Commission. Learn more at capella.edu/accreditation.